Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are about to have a conversation with Derek Barnes, who is an amazing children's author who has written a series called Ruby and the Booker Boys, which we'll talk about. His latest book is We Could Be Brothers, and he's written more than that, and we'll talk about everything he's written and how he approaches this work and what he's trying to tell us all. And Derek Barnes, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mr.
Steiner. It's Mark, by the way.
All right.
Mr. Steiner makes me feel...
Those are my southern roots.
No, that's good. I appreciate that. I understand that. That's cool. That's cool. I mean, I probably could be your father, but I'm not, you know, so. So how did you get into this? Tell us about your sojourn into this world of children's literature.
Well, you know, like most authors start off, I've been writing my whole life since the age of 10, but I didn't meet my first African-American male published author until I was in college. I guess I was maybe 21. It was Dennis Kimbrough. He was my first author I ever met. But my first job right out of school was as a greeting card copywriter. I was the first African-American man in the history of Hallmark cards to be hired as a copywriter. And like I've mentioned countless times before, it was like graduate school for me, man. Everyone there was a veteran writer, a published poet, published illustrator, and art shows around the country. So, and a lot of them had representation. So I landed my literary agent through an artist that was working there at the time, and signed a deal with her, a young lady based in Brooklyn, New York. And I guess like maybe 2 months later, I had my first two-book deal. This book, Scholastic, there were two early reader books, Stop, Drop, and Chill, and The Lowdown Bad Day Blues. Those were my first two books. That was 2003.
And those were just the Booker Boys, right? Not Ruby and the Booker Boys. That was just the Booker Boys.
Yeah, I created the Booker Boys at that time, but we couldn't find a home. We couldn't find a publishing house that was interested in taking a chance on it. So I put it aside maybe about 4 or 5 years. And I tell kids this all the time when I go into school visits. If you are creating work, pieces of work, never throw it away, because you never know when you may want to pull it out and use it again and breathe new life into it. So maybe like 4 years later, my agent, and she recommended I take one of the sub characters. It was Ruby. It was the Booker Boy's little sister, and make her the main character. And that's what I did. I rewrote all 5 manuscripts, and the first company we shopped it to, it was Scholastic, and they ended up giving us a 4-book deal.
Ruby, I mean, you have these three boys that some people would say maybe your three boys are loosely the Booker Boys, but you don't have a daughter.
I don't have a daughter. So. I don't have a daughter. You know, it was a challenge initially, you know, the thought of doing it, because like I said, I have 3 sons, but the time when that challenge was proposed to me, it was around the time of the Don Imus incident. He made that comment about the Rutgers women's basketball.
Oh yes, right.
And you know, like I said, I take my social responsibility as an artist, not only as an artist, but as an author and as a father and a husband, very, very, very seriously. And I look at it as an extreme blessing. So if I'm going to put product out into the world, and these are things that are going to be my legacy, I want to create things that make people feel good, inspire people. So it really wasn't that hard to create a series where 8-year-old African-American girl was the main character. I've been around black women my whole life. I'm crazy about them, you know what I mean? So I said, I want to put that out there and challenge all these negative images and ideas that I see, not only about black women, but just a void of literature for African-American children.
Mm-hmm. And especially a void with literature about and for African-American children and a broader audience, not just African-American kids, because I hate seeing sometimes books kind of be shoved into a ghetto of books. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Because your books speak to more than just black children.
Yes. I describe my books like that, you know, all the time. They are books that are written in the universal themes that could appeal to people from all walks of life. They just so happen to have little brown faces as a protagonist. So, I want to appeal to everyone, but, you know, having three sons, and my oldest son is really, he really became conscious of it when he was around 7. We would go see movies, I would buy him books, he would wonder why the main characters don't look like him. You
mm-hmm.
know? Like, I remember we went to see the Spiderwick Chronicles, which was a book as well, and he said, I wonder why they don't make books, make movies where there are black kids. They don't think we dream, they don't think we want to have things.
Wow.
And so, you know what I'm saying, I took it upon myself to say, if I'm in this business, I'm going to make sure not only is my son is able to see himself as the hero, as a protagonist, but, you know, children all over the planet, really. You know,
yeah, it's, when I think about how you write your characters, I mean, I saw an interview with you once where, I read an interview where you said, Ruby and the Booker Boys, I can't remember if I got this right, were like Bill Cosby meets Spike Lee's Crooklyn, and you said something else. But
Pippi Longstocking.
Yes, and Pippi Longstocking, that's what it was. Right.
If you're old enough to remember who Pippi Longstocking is.
That's right. I am.
Yeah. That's right, Dad.
You got it. But it is true, though, because your characters do something that so many people don't do at a number of levels. I'm going to take them one at a time. One is that you really – you like to paint pictures in whole families, which is – and positive whole families. Not, and some people could look at that and say, oh, that's going to be boring. But it's not, obviously, because all these adventures are inside the book. But it's clearly, I mean, you when you think of the ghettoization of literature about black kids, part of that is they always have to be battling the mean streets.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny, you mentioned the Cosby Show. It was a huge influence in my life going to popular culture growing up. I remember waiting every Thursday night to see this affluent black family living in Brooklyn, living in this immaculate brownstone, and, you know, both parents are professionals. And one of the running dialogues the black people would have at that time was that this is not a real black family, you know what I mean? But depends on where you live and what socioeconomic status you were in, this was very much a reality. But in my life, it wasn't. I didn't have a dad. My mom worked all the time, and my brother was 7 years older than I am, but he was like a father figure. But to be able to see this family, man, really inspired me, you know, to see that it is possible for a black man to be a responsible father, to be a loving husband, you know what I mean? So I can paint those grim pictures of what it was like to grow up in single-parent household, to hear gunshots in my neighborhood, but I don't know. I choose to write something positive to give people hope. So there are tons of children that grow up just like I did, regardless of race. And if I have to paint a picture, I want to paint a picture of what can be, you know?
And what should be.
That's right.
And I've read somewhere else that some of Ruby and the Booker Boys has had a hard time with some of the publishers. Is that true, or getting it out there?
The toughest part being an author, regardless of what genre you're in, is the whole marketing and promotion. And I used to get frustrated by the early on. Like, man, I'm writing these positive characters. There aren't a lot of books for African American children. And I can't get on the radio show. I can't get in magazines. I can't do any of this. So, well, it's not only an issue that I'm facing. A lot of authors face that. In this day and age of reality TV and whatnot, you know, a lot of sensationalized, you know, material will win out over, you know, the positive children's book or children's book author. And I understand that, you know, know, pretty much. But I can't let it frustrate me. You know, I have to find avenues like your show, which is a very positive show, reaches out to a broad range of listeners. And I just have to, with those saying, get in where I fit in, you know. And I try to do as many school visits as possible across the country, library visits, and just keep it moving. And hopefully word of mouth will help out my cause. We'll see.
Well, it needs to be out there. And I know you've made a – part of your career has been also doing your own marketing, and you've talked to many people about how you have to push your own work and very active in pushing your own work, building your audience.
Yes, sir. The Internet, Facebook is a very valuable tool. It's used much more than just looking up ex-boyfriends and girlfriends. You know, I made some very valuable connections on Facebook, seriously, through educators, librarians, advocates of literacy across the country. So it's been a very important tool. And I send out like maybe 150 to 200 emails every week. I Google schools that may find some interest in my book, and I have a formed email. And I like 200 each week. You gotta stay on the grind, you know.
And you do, and actually you can go to Facebook for both your books, Ruby and the Booker Boys, and We Could Be Brothers, and you can hit the like button, which I did today, by the way.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Because I like them.
All right.
Your latest work, We Could Be Brothers, this is – I found that really interesting, the book where you bring together these two young men. This is where you do have somebody from the street, but also somebody from a more middle-class family. Who end up in the suspension room together,
yeah,
and bond. He's one little guy who dresses like he's in the street, and one little guy who dresses like he's not in the street.
Yeah.
So talk about that story.
Okay. Well, it's about two 13-year-old boys, and it's pretty much a snapshot of an entire week where they both have to serve an after-school suspension from two totally unrelated incidents that involve the same person. And other than serving time in this after-school suspension, they would never cross paths. They wouldn't probably be friends. But during this four-day span, they get an opportunity to discuss issues that I thought were relevant amongst African-American boys, regardless of what their family structure is, but talk about their future, talk about the sad state of hip hop music, respect of women, respect of self, you know, regardless of how they dress, and having your pants sagging low, not having your pants sagging low, wearing a belt, the whole nine, the use of the dreaded N-word. And these two young brothers talk about these, you know, a whole multitude of issues. And I really just wanted to highlight how the conversation, you know, the flow of the conversation goes when you have a young man that has a father that's very active in his life. It really helps to mold the way he views the world, as opposed to a young man that's left his own, you know, vices and has to kind of figure it out on his own. You know, what is this conversation like when they talk about using the N-word? Well, my dad uses the word brother. You know, when he relates to his friends or maybe his stranger, he uses the word brother. I mean, that's a dialogue that I've heard, but you know, you really don't see these conversations being highlighted in regards to African-American boys. It's a very one-dimensional view about us, pretty much just being athletes, being buffoons, being very violent and whatnot. But these are boys that are sons, nephews, grandsons, boys that you go to church with. You know what I mean? Like, I really made it a point to make Pacino Clapton, the boy from the single-parent household, very responsible. You have to take care of his 25-year-old sisters. He's a straight-A student. He cuts hair at home every single day to help his mom pay bills. You know, there's a lot of Latino clappings across this country, but you know, we don't bring enough light to each other.
The stories you're trying to tell, I one of the things that struck me, especially the way you do this, is, I mean, the kids are very real. Little Ruby is somebody who, if you've been to any school, you've met Ruby. You know, she's sassy and smart and witty, and I mean, she's just this amazing little kid. And I'd love to watch you one day when you were with young people reading your books and watch their reaction. I'm dying to see kids read these books.
Yeah, I just returned from Little Rock, Arkansas. I did an event called Encouraging Our Sons to Read. It was put on by a very active literacy advocate, a young man named Patrick Oliver, and we did a school visit down there. And, you know, the principal came up to me afterwards, and the kids enjoyed it. And, you know, really, when I do school visits, whether it's a classroom or an entire grade level or an entire school, I really don't have a problem interacting with children. And I love to see their faces, and most of all, I treat them like I treat my children. You know what I mean? So I have a very open conversation with them about the characters, about the stories, and it's probably the most fun part of the job, to say, to interact with children and to see them enjoy, pieces of work that you sit in solitude to make, crafting it just for y'all, and to go and meet the readers and meet the children, Washington, D.C., Little Rock, Arkansas, Jackson, Mississippi, Brooklyn, New York. It's just a great feeling.
Now, on your website, when I opened this morning, the first thing I saw was this kind of reenactment of a little piece of We Could Be Brothers. Who are those kids, and how'd you do that?
I was a teacher this summer in a literacy program here in Kansas City, Missouri, and I held a short story workshop. It was over like a 2-month span. And I taught at 3 different locations. So, Monday and Tuesday I went to one, and Wednesday and Friday, and so forth and so on. And I held auditions. They were all middle school students, 6th to 8th grade. And I had open call auditions at all three locations. And at least 20 to 25 boys interviewed at each spot, and whittled down to these two cats, man. And, he did a good job. All I had to do was give them some pizza. Their parents were grateful that, I started a reel for these young guys if they decided to become actors one day. And it was a great experience, man. I used my own money, of course. And my uncle was the cameraman. Big shout out to my Uncle Jerome. And, that's how you got to do it, I had an idea visually of what I saw, how these young men look, how they interact with each other, and I want to interview the characters. When young men saw this trailer, I want them to see themselves. Man, I do the same thing. I have a dad like that, or I have the same time instructor and responsibility, that he has. So that's what it's all about: getting the readers to see themselves and the characters that you see.
So what are your dreams for your books? I mean, what do you want this to take you and your career? I mean, you've got, like, what is it, 8 books out now?
8 books.
That's 8 books.
Signed on for 2 more Ruby books, and have a few books in the wings I'm working on, and I'm working on a new boy series right now. But, man, I talk to my illustrator buddies, and they're all around my age and a little bit older, and we really talk about legacy. I mean, that's the most important thing, regardless of what you do for a living, as an author or a playwright, a director, a musician. You should be striving to create some type of legacy. When all this is over with, I want people to be able to look at my book. I know my catalog is kind of short right now with 8 books, but one day, hopefully there'll be 30, 40 books. When it's all over, I want people to say, I made some type of difference in popular culture, literature. I have to inspire people, my books. And, that's pretty much what it's all about. I want to be able to take care of my family with this art form, like most artists do. But I really want to leave a legacy.
Well, you're on your way to do that now. I could see some of these characters. I could see Ruby. I could see the two young men in We Could Be Brothers, Crease. I love the names you give these guys. Pacino and Kreese, Pacino and Robeson.
Robeson,
but he's Kreese.
That's his right? name. Because he dresses really neat, and he always has a belt on, and clothes are always ironed. His dad is on him about the way his appearance. You know, I talk about this with my sons all the time. You know, before they get out of the car in the morning, my boys are 4, 6, 10. I say, be great, be a leader, and they all holler out, be a bond. You know. You are representing your family. You represent yourself. You represent your family. I'm talking about every single moment you're away from this house, you are representing me. I always want people to say something good about you. Because if they say positive things about you, it's a reflection on the job that myself and my wife is doing. So it's very important.
You don't have to holler after your boys and pull up your pants.
not at all. And, you know, last week my 6-year-old saw some teenagers with their pants down, and he just shook his head. I said, "What's wrong, Solo? Solomon is his name. That boy must don't have a daddy at home."
Ooh, hello.
They're six, you know.
But that says a lot, though, doesn't it?
It does, man. It does. I think it all starts at home, and I just would like it if there are any men. Especially African American men, but just men, period. I just beg you guys to make yourself visible in your community. You know, our young men, like I said, regardless of race, need to see tangible and visible examples of what a man is, regardless of what you do for a living. You can be a big superstar guy with his own radio show, your children's book author, you can be a custodian. If you take care of your business and handle your business every day, go to work, take care of your family. You know, these are images that our boys need to see. They need to dialogue with on a regular basis. So having a man, a real man in your life, makes a huge difference to what type of man you'll ultimately become.
That's
very conscious of that.
And that's good. And your, I think your work. Your work reflects that. Your books reflect that. You know, it's. I was thinking, I was reading your book. I was thinking about when I was a kid. One of the books that really affected me when I was young were Langston Hughes's Simple Stories.
Oh yeah. That was the catalyst for, you know, my writing career. Creating characters. I mean, reading that. You know, of course, I love his poetry, but reading his essays and reading the Simple series really helped me jumpstart character development and, you know, dialogue, which is so important because the kids read dialogue, and if the speech is not the type of speech pattern, you know, they can recognize and understand, they lose interest immediately. So, you know, reading those Jesse B. Simple characters and stories, reading the dialogues, exactly what happened to various characters, it really was the catalyst for, you know, me becoming an author.
Well, that's a good catalyst.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those were important books that he wrote back then. Right. And your style, I mean, your style is your style, but I can feel that in your style.
That's what I strive for. That's pretty much what it's all about as well. You know, reaching back, paying homage to the people that inspired us the most. I'm really inspired, of course, I said by Langston Hughes, but there are some musicians that inspire me and that really keep me going. And I strive to put out the type of work that they put out. You know, hopefully one of these days.
Well, you will. On those questions, you're going to hit it. I mean, you are hitting it, but I mean, you're going to really hit it. We got to figure out a way to get you from Kansas City to Baltimore, D.C., so folks can meet you and get these books in there, like a lot of kids' hands. We're going to do our best to let them know about your work.
Right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I appreciate what you've been writing. We've been talking with Derek Barnes. A wonderful children's author. His latest book is We Could Be Brothers. There's a whole series called Ruby and the Booker Boys for your 8-year-old kid. And I guess that the The We Could Be Brothers is a middle school book.
10 to 13.
Yeah. So I'm hand this to my 13-year-old, and I'm going to hand these other ones to these other kids I know, and I'll let you know what they say.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right.
I appreciate the time, Mr. Steiner. Thank you so very much. And to all the kids and parents, please be active. Exhaust your children's reading, literacy. Try to sit down at least 30 minutes every night and read to them. You know, regardless of what you're reading, hopefully if we could be brothers or reading the Book of Boys. But if not, just as long as we read and spend that quality time with our children. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. And I say amen to that. What you just said was absolutely what people need to hear. And, folks, you can go on over to the SteinerShow.org website and link to Derek Barnes' website, and to his books and to his Facebook pages. And Derek Barnes, thank you. We look forward to doing this again with you.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538.